And then we get the spotlight, the chorus, and then... So yeah, then we're in London.
First guest is an actor, singer, and podcaster who has appeared in Ricky and the Flash with Meryl Streep and Kevin Kline, and can be seen opposite Zachary Quinto on The Slap on NBC. He is also the creator and co-host of the podcast Movies in the Buff, which is available for download on all major podcast outlets. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome John Dreyer!
I'm here, bitches. We're going to do some Disney time.
He is here. We are here.
I'm excited. Thanks for having me, man.
Dude, thank you.
I like how I'm your kind of go-to guy for like, hey, want to do a Disney movie? I'm like, yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Hey, you know what? As long as somebody else likes them, that is fine with me.
I was telling my mom that I was like, yeah, I'm going to do another podcast with John O'Connor. And she's like, oh, yeah, what are you going to talk about? And I said... He asked me to do The Sword and the Stone, and she was like, oh, of course, of course. And I was like, yeah, he basically said, hey, do you want to do Sword and the... And I was like, yep, absolutely. Don't have to ask me. You don't even... I was going to say you don't have to ask me twice. You don't even ask me once. You want to do Sword and the Stone? Yeah, yes.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't?
Yes.
Aside from your mom, who wouldn't?
Funny. Anyway, sorry. I totally just hijacked the intro.
No, that's great, because we're talking about Sword in the Stone today.
Yes, we are.
Very excited. This is a Disney movie that was released in 1963 on Christmas, which I never knew that.
Yeah, wow.
December.
You were like 3 years old at that point?
I was 2.5.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yes, December 25th, 1963. This movie's over 50 years old.
It's crazy. It's wild to think that.
And I think it's crazy because it still holds up. I rewatched this for this, and I'm sure you did. I thought nothing of it. Like, I didn't think once about this movie being dated, about anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Still completely holds up, I thought, as a good film.
I think the datedness comes in the overall storytelling of it, and the overall, and this is not a negative by any means, because I think the overall storytelling is really good, but it's a dated form of storytelling and dated music,
for sure. Yeah.
So like that's where it shows its age. But outside of that, like I was thinking about that when I was watching it too. Like you could show this to a kid now, and they would not think twice about it.
Yeah, it's not like they're not going to be entertained by it.
Right. Right.
It's got more of a, you know, a conventional kind of classic setup and framework like you're talking about. But overall, I mean, for my money, it's still entertaining, still fun, still funny, still enjoyable.
Yep.
And sure, it's hand-drawn, but other than that, it looks great.
Right, it really does. Well, and especially because you and I watched it on Disney Plus.
Yes.
And on Disney Plus, the reason because I own it as well, and I was like, oh, let me see. I clicked on Disney Plus, saw that it was on there, and saw that it was in 4K HDR, and was like, ooh, I am interested.
Yes.
Throwback to our last episode that we did together, Robin Hood is on Disney Plus, not in 4K HDR.
Interesting. But Sword and Stone is.
People have it. Well, it's a more popular movie. They'll take the money and time to remaster it first, because more people will watch Sword and Stone than Robin Hood, I think.
That's interesting.
But anyway, yeah, so I was very curious this watch through to see, like, what could I notice that, you know, in this remastering? Because it's not released. You can't buy it from Best Buy or whatever in 4K HDR. You can only get it in 4K through the service.
Interesting. So you can get like a Blu-ray, but not 4K.
Correct.
Retail.
Correct.
Interesting.
And it's the same with Star Wars and the new Disney Plus. All the new Star Wars, all of the Star Wars has been, all of the Star Wars have been remastered in 4K HDR.
Oh, interesting.
But you can't buy those.
That's
in
funny.
4K.
Well, what about, how about the new ones?
The new ones you can. Awakens and Forward.
But the original six, you not the original six. The original three and the prequels you cannot.
Correct. But it is in 4K HDR on Disney Plus.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So when I go through my, I'm going to rewatch all of them before episode 9 comes
how
out
could
in
you
December.
Not?
Yeah. And anyway, interesting. Just interesting how it's like, you know, they're doing, you know, I'm sure after the ninth one is released, they'll do a whole 4K box set or whatever. But really interesting that through Disney Plus, all of their original like throwback movies are in 4K.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
So,
including Sword of the Stone.
Including Sword of the Stone, which is what we're talking about now. We're back. Okay.
Which we're talking about today. So, for anybody that has not seen it, first of all, you should stop listening to this and go see it.
What are you doing with your life?
Come on. What are you doing here?
It's 50 years
you
old.
You have Disney Plus. You can watch it on your phone for $7.
Yep.
Go get it now. And the whole plot of the story is that the King of England dies, leaving no heir to the throne. And England is threatened to be torn apart by war.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, the Sword and the Stone appears in London in a stone anvil with an inscription that says, whoever pulls the sword from the stone is rightwise the king. Right?
Is that verbatim what it says?
No, I'm very, very much paraphrasing.
I know, I'm just kidding. But yes.
Whoso pulleth out this sword of the... And that's a really good impression, too.
It's exactly right.
But, yeah, it
would be the rightful king of... whatever.
Yeah. Is rightwise king,
yes.
Born of England. So
there it
if
is.
Whoever it is that pulls this sword out of the stone is the new king.
Right.
That's the whole story.
Yep.
And it picks up with, I believe the opening is Merlin. Is that right? Well, first of all, let me take that back. Like Robin Hood, you get the actual physical book that is opened.
Yes.
With like a minstrel singing about this movie, which
I love it.
This song.
Yeah.
This song.
It's
that
great.
Dude is belting.
Yo. He's got a legit voice, man.
He is really good. I don't know who he is.
Yep.
But I'm like, I caught myself singing it.
Mm.
It's really good.
It's a great song. Yeah.
It's and a really
voice,
good song.
It's, you know, it's that classic
vibrato, right?
Vibrato. Well, I was going to go into like, it's like a bel canto method. I was going to go into deeper shit, but
I'll pretend to know what that is. Sure, go ahead.
But, you know, essentially it was the, you know, you listen to like Andy Williams and Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra and all those kind of like singers around that time. Frank, not as much. I mean, this guy doesn't croon, but you know, it's legit training. You know, back then, if you were a singer, you were a trained singer,
right?
You know, like you had training, and it wasn't until right around this time in mid '60s,
where you didn't have to be trained to be a successful singer,
right? I mean, it's basically like when Elvis and the Beatles and all of that started coming out and Johnny Cash and Roy Orbison, like we were talking about, like all of that kind of movement was like, oh, okay, so we're going away from, if I'm going to listen to the record, it's going to be a legit sound, to, you know, what happened in the 60s, right?
Yes.
So interesting, but it's, again, that's where it's like, oh, this is dated. A dated sound.
Absolutely.
And it's fucking beautiful and stunning. And it is interesting that it made me think of Robin Hood, because Robin Hood happens in the 70s. And so you hear
10 years later.
Yeah. So you hear the difference in sound when Roger Miller sings of Robin, you know, it's not like a super stunning voice. And listen, this guy, you're like, oh, man, this guy would perform at Carnegie Hall.
Easily. Yeah. Know? Robin Hood, the intro for that is very acoustic, very like you were saying, kind of almost Dylan-ish.
Yeah, right.
Folky.
Yeah, folky, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love how there's an overture. That's another thing of what I was mentioning about the datedness of this mode of storytelling. You have a whole overture, like you would if you go see a musical, or you go see an opera, or any of this older, you know, more traditional style. You get this whole overture. And the reason for the overture is it takes you through the sort of journey of the show. You know, you listen to like Rodgers and Hammerstein, Oklahoma, all that kind of stuff. You'll hear every melody through the overture, through the 3 or 4 minute overture that you're going to hear in the next 2 hours of the show, so that you're like, your brain is already familiar with it. So then when you hear it, you then don't have to like register it for the first time.
Right.
You know, you can just be like, oh, great. Now I'm in the story. Right. And it's sort of, the overture also serves to show you like, okay, so is this going to be Rock of Ages style? Like, is this going to be Jersey Boys? Or is this going to be Rodgers and Hammerstein? Or like, what world are we in? And it's something that I noticed in this going like, yeah, because that the overture happens before the dude starts singing, before the book opens.
Yes. Ba-ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba-ba, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's a 3 minute thing. We see all of the credits roll and everything. Yeah. Right. And that's something that I really love, a good overture.
Yeah.
You know, you get it with like Gone with the Wind. Same thing. You get like the whole, and you're like, okay, here I am. This is the world we're in. This is the musical world that we're in. Because like with Robin Hood and Sword in the Stone take place in England in a different time, but without the overture in Robin Hood, you don't know, oh, this is a folksy world that we're in. Great.
Right.
This is a more traditional like strings, trumpets. Oh, but there's that like jazz kind of piano in here too. Okay, cool. All right, here we are. You know. So anyway, I think that's really great.
Yes, me too.
But yes, it opens up with the guy singing, and then we get the voiceover, and he says like, this is a dark time, you know, we've fallen into war and famine, and though, you know, the strong prey on the weak, and this, and we see like a wolf, and we see the forest, and then we see Merlin at the well.
Yes.
And he's getting this bucket of water out.
Yeah, which is so comedic.
It's so funny, and it's, every time I see that I'm like, how is there any water left in that bucket?
Right.
Because he like gets it all, finally gets it out. He gets it, it like dumps everywhere. And then it's a bucket that like is full of holes anyway. But somehow he carries it and it's spilling all the way back to his little hut. And it's crazy. It's funny.
Well, what I love too is that one thing about Merlin is he has a lot of great either expressions or sayings in the movie. And this one in particular, he's, you know, that opening sequence, he's pulling the water out of the well, and he just, it's comedic. It's like Steve Urkel. Like, he just can't get it done.
Right.
And it's falling back in. It's splashing him all over. It's all this stuff. And then even when he goes to walk away, he gets stuck in the chain from the well, and he goes, oh, you fiendish chain. Like, fiendish chain. Those are two funny words together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he goes back into his hut, and he starts, I think, predicting to his owl, Archimedes.
Yeah.
Who, I love Archimedes. I think Archimedes is a funny character. And I love when he's introduced.
Yes.
I think Merlin calls to him, and when he sticks his head out, he has like a little house, like a birdhouse in his hut. And he says, who? Who? It's like an owl, but then he goes, but what? And then he starts talking to him.
Right. The introduction of Archimedes is so great because
they fool you for 1 second.
Well, because the animal that we see, the only other animal we see before is a wolf that doesn't talk. So you're like, okay, what are the rules of this story?
Right.
Right. And so Archimedes pops out and says, who? And you're like, oh, right, because he's an owl. Okay. Oh, he speaks English. Oh, he can talk. Oh, great. Okay.
And he's smart.
And he's smart. Yeah. I have a note written down at some point of just like, you know, all these like new Disney Plus shows that are coming out, you know, where they're taking like, you know, the Loki, and, you know, they're taking all of these other, you know, or like when Lion King came out a while ago, and then there was like a Timon and Pumbaa show, and then there was like, you know, I want a show that's just Merlin and Archimedes.
Oh, me too.
It's like, it'd be like The Odd Couple, man. It'd be so funny just to like, let's see like a prequel 30-minute comedy show of just those two characters, you know, and just going on adventures together. How fun would that be?
Because I would love it.
Their rapport together is hilarious through.
They're two grouchy old men.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, me too. And we get the introduction to Wart.
Mm-hmm.
The main character,
yep.
Also known as Arthur,
which but we don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet,
right?
We eventually find out his name is Arthur,
right? Because jumping to the end, I have a great note of like, what a great reveal that you're like, because through the whole movie, you never hear his name.
Well, they actually do. He says it. he says it, his dad says it at one point, because I was surprised by that. I'm like, oh, I should have known.
When does he, well, because it's not his dad, moment. But.
No, his stepdad, or his adopted dad.
His master.
Yeah. Well, he says he adopted, this guy says he adopted him.
Right.
During the film.
Okay.
But at one point in the film, he says, I think Wart says his name is Arthur to Merlin.
Oh, right. But they all call me Wart.
Yeah, but they all call me Wart. And right. I never, ever, until this viewing, put it together. Like, I know later in the film, obviously, you know, they say, oh.
King Arthur, round table, all that stuff.
But I never, until this viewing, never realized that he said his name before that. All that.
Right, right.
Because I'm like, oh, then I was kind of mad at myself. Like, I should have saw that shit coming.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think it's also because, like, we already know that it's the story of King Arthur.
Right.
So, yeah, we skip over that. But that's so true. That's so true. Did you know that Walt Disney was actually the model for Merlin? Unbeknownst to Walt Disney, the man Walt Disney.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I was reading that this time through, and I was reading that the animator, unbeknownst to Walt, modeled Merlin after Walt Disney.
Interesting.
And he said, actually, I used Walt Disney's nose for Merlin.
Oh.
And but he said the reason he thought of Walt for Merlin is because he's sort of this crotchety old man who is very serious and very this, but is so fun-loving as well.
Yes.
And so I thought that was really interesting. I never knew that before. And then
never knew that.
Watching it through this time with that kind of knowledge, I'm like, oh, I could see how this is like. Because Walt Disney, I read that he died. I think this is his last full film before. I think he died in the middle of the making of the next Disney movie.
Interesting.
So it's pretty soon after this that he passes away. Hmm. Anyway, thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
Well, we get the introduction of Wart or yep. Arthur. He's out there with his brother, Kay, who is the shittiest character in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
By which I mean I want to kill this fucking guy.
Oh, yeah.
I hate him with the fire of 12,000 suns. I hate that guy.
Right.
He sucks.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's the worst. And he's like just classic meathead. I mean, like this viewing through, I was like, oh, I see what they're doing. I mean, they really lean heavy into this like brains versus brawn. Just because you're the jock doesn't mean that you're fit to lead or fit to whatever. And boy, do they really lean into that.
This time through, I hated him more than ever. He is a big old dumb musclehead schmuck.
Yeah. Oh, he really is.
I hate him.
Yeah. He's the kind of guy that like made me stop working at the gym and doing personal training. So I was like, I'm sitting around the gym all day with these guys who are that guy who like literally can't do anything else. And this isn't all personal trainers by any means, because clearly, but the places that I was working at, I was like, You can't. I mean, what are you doing? Like, you have no – what are you talking about? You have no idea of nothing. So, anyway, that guy reminds me of those meatheads.
He's total meathead, total schmuck, total
like,
idiot.
The guy who sits in the gym across from me, like, we're sitting back there, and he goes, hey, bro. Like, yeah, what's up? Yo, bro, I'm going to get veiny, bro. I want to get veiny, bro.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good luck with you and your veins. But that's fucking mm-hmm.
If
his
Kay
brother,
knew what veiny meant, he would say that shit all the
absolutely.
Time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So he's out there. Kay is hunting and Wart is there like as his squire.
Mm-hmm.
He goes – he's like above him and like crashes out of a branch and like falls and knocks the arrow into the deep dark woods.
Which if it were Robin Hood, he'd just shoot another arrow and then it would
– you know, he would. But here we are. Kay, again, not smart, nope. Not charming, no social skills, not skilled.
No.
So he tries to kill Wart basically. Not kill him, but he tries to beat him up.
Yeah.
Wart runs away and says, I'll get the arrow. Don't worry. And he goes into the woods, which are deep and dark. And he's like, you're crazy to go in there. And then he just lets him go. He's also like, that place is swarming with wolves. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Well, what's so interesting about that, looking at like the later journey and arc of these characters, is that Kay's supposed to be the brave one. Kay's supposed to be the leader. Kay's, and here's Wart who goes in there and no fear.
None.
I mean, maybe he's afraid, but he journeys in, and you're like, oh wow, yeah, that is something King Arthur would do. Wow, that does make sense that you would be a king and a leader.
Right. And he works his way through the woods. It's about 20, 30 seconds, and then he sees the arrow in a tree, and he climbs up the tree, and he goes to reach it, and he falls, and he smashes through the roof of a hut, and he lands in Merlin's hut, right where Merlin had predicted to Archimedes that he would land. But one thing I was going to say before we get into that is, whoa, what? Whoa! Whoa, what? Wow! Wart says that in the film 32 times.
Yeah. Yep.
It's the same sound effect every time he trips and falls or he's in danger or whatever. Yeah. Oh, what? Whoa! Every time.
I didn't think about that. That's so true.
And that's when he meets Merlin and Archimedes, and the story kind of really begins.
Yeah, it starts taking off. Absolutely. I love on the way there that that we get introduced to this, you know, sort of Looney Tunes character of the wolf. And I love that as Wart's hopping through the trees, the wolf just sits there with his mouth open underneath, just like waiting for him. He just is like,
I know. You know?
Yeah. And it's so funny that he just, like, I just.
It's very Wile E. Coyote.
It really is Wile E. Coyote, yeah. And it's one thing that I'll say that I really loved this time through is tracking the story and character arc of that wolf.
Yeah.
Because, like, you think that, oh, this is just a little thing. And then, you know, we go into the scene with Merlin and introducing all that stuff. And then the wolf pops out
later
again, like, when they're all leaving. And you're like, oh, the wolf, like, hung out and waited for him. Oh, okay. And then the wolf, like, we're getting all of this voiceover of Merlin explaining to Wart all these things. But the camera's not on them. The camera's on the wolf.
Yes.
And so we're watching the wolf hunt them in a doofy way. And, like, all of the, like, you know, slapstick, like, things and all that stuff. And then he, like, hikes all the way up to the top of the mountain. He finally gets there, and he's...
yeah.
And then he looks and sees that they're all the way down the mountain, and he just goes... you know, collapses. So funny. And then he shows up again later, too. And
yes,
I'm like,
he does.
Yo, I never remember... I mean, I remembered this, of course, but, like... So interesting. What an interesting choice that they didn't have to do that. You know, like, it could have just been a random one-off character, and we actually track his sort of story arc through the whole movie, and I think that's really funny.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it was probably just we've got some exposition here, but let's make it funny by having this wolf chase him and never get him.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, because he shows up again when the squirrels happen. So
yes,
funny.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, I wanted to finish off that storyline of the wolf. But jumping back, this first scene with all of them sitting around the table is really great.
Yes,
I think my favorite part about it is the sugar. The sugar, the character of the sugar guy, sugar man, I think they called him, or the sugar pot, or whatever his character that name is such brilliant animation. Because they really make it this is the beginning of what we see now with Pixar and everything, where you're like, oh wow, yeah, you make this a real living being with thoughts and needs and character.
Yes, with absolutely no face or voice,
right?
Or realistically, with no real human-looking qualities at all.
Nothing.
They make this sugar bowl, I guess you'd say, look so human.
Right.
And he acts like a person, and he has an actual personality.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you get a full character, a three-dimensional character, you know, and you know, he hops over, and he's pouring the... It's like Beauty and the Beast, right? He's pouring the sugar into the cup, and Merlin goes, when? And then, you know, the sugar goes, hops back or whatever. And then when we see him later... You know, Merlin's like, all right, everyone pack up. Hey, bitty poppity, bitty bop. And the sugar's like ready to go first. He's
yes.
like, great, here we go. And and Merlin goes, no, the book's first. You know this. Like, they have a relationship.
Yes.
That this one fucking sugar thing doesn't, you know.
As if, like, sugar, we've been over this.
Yeah, yeah. Right. We do this all the time. You know this. The books go first.
Yes.
And then when it's finally his turn, he then, like, hops up there. He goes, you know, he hops up and, like, jumps in the first line for the silverware pottery or whatever, and then uses his spoon to fight off
like a teapot
or whatever. Like, no, it's my turn. Okay, I'm here. Blah, blah, blah. And I just, it's incredible. It's really, the animation is really, really incredible to get all of that.
And I love that, just to punctuate the whole thing, the sugar, like you said, starts fighting him with the spoon. And then Merlin's like, all right, hold on. He stops the whole – it's like a magical spell. All the books, everything is moving in a line.
Uh-huh.
And he stops and he just shoves all the books out of the way. And he's like, now, sugar, we've been over this. And he like starts yelling at him. And then he's like, this till tea set is cracked enough without you.
Right.
Causing any more trouble.
Right.
And so the sugar's just standing there. And as soon as Merlin walks away, he takes the spoon and just one more. Boom! Like a like an elbow in the ribs behind him.
Yeah, right.
Like – just one more little devilish move to reinforce this little bratty sugar bowl.
Yeah. I love that.
And I remember as a kid, really, you know, basically Merlin says to Wart, like, oh, we've got to teach you, son. You've got to get an education. I'll come with you back to the castle.
Mm.
And he packs up his whole hut and he starts the – this is really the first time – you've seen Merlin do like a little flash of magic, but this is the first time you really see what he's capable of.
Right, and you're like, oh.
And he just starts tapping a wand, and he starts conducting a song, and everything just starts moving into his bag, and it starts shrinking down little teeny tiny as it goes.
Yep.
And I love that because by the end of it, it's a catchy little song. It's a fun little number.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah. And by the end, what I love about it is he's doing this whole thing from a footstool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last moment of this song, Prestidigitorium! And the last thing that leaves is the footstool he's standing on.
Right.
Which then dives into the bag and knocks him flat on his back.
Uh-huh.
And then there they are sitting in what used to be this packed full of science experiments and beakers and bubbling potions and books and a birdhouse and plates and dishes and a fire and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Empty. Completely empty. Empty hut with just a little bag. All right, boy, let's go.
Yeah, and he says, you really know how to pack. And then he says something like, well, how else would you fit all this stuff into a little briefcase, I'd like to know? Like,
matter of fact,
and like legit asking him a question. He's like, well, how else would you fit all this stuff into this bag? I don't know. Like, do you have a better idea? No? All right, well, let's go.
Yeah. What are you complaining about?
Yeah, right. I love that. Yeah. And I love... We in this first scene too, we get the kind of intro to like the kind of Foley and sound effects that we're gonna get throughout the rest of this.
Yes.
Which we talked about in Robin Hood, but it's so clear in this one, and it's one of my favorite elements of this movie is how much of the sound effects, the Foley, is made by people.
Yes.
You know, like when the steam train goes by, you know, he's like, oh well, in the future we'll have the steam locomotives, and it's just like
yeah.
And it's just like a mixture of that, and then, you know, all of these things, and you get the, you know, boop, and
a lot of human swishes,
yeah,
stuff like that,
yeah, totally. Yep. And I love that about this movie.
Me too. And we, like we've already discussed from here, that you know, Merlin is explaining everything to him on the way back to the castle. The wolf chases him, and then they get back to the castle, and then now we see for the first time we see Wart's. Technically his adoptive father, but he's not really good to him.
Right.
He took him in. Yeah. You hear him explain that he took him in, and then you see Kay, and they're sitting basically, are they training at this point, or are they by a fire?
He's eating a turkey leg or chicken leg.
Kay, I hate him so much. But apparently, whatever castle he lives in, all they serve is drumsticks.
Yeah.
Because he is... ripping the tendons off of about, I think, and I was joking earlier, but I think he eats like four of them.
Yeah, I think
in this
so.
Scene.
I think
all
so.
He's eating is drumsticks.
Yep.
And he's throwing them to the dogs, which they do have a bit of, they have some borrowed animation in the movie. Kay trips exactly the same way a couple of times. But similarly to the way in the Jungle Book, Mowgli is raised by wolves. So I don't know if Jungle Book borrowed from this. It must have been, because Jungle Book came out later.
Yeah.
But there's a scene where when Wart shows back up at the castle, the two dogs that went after the bone rush up and jump on him and start licking his face, and he says hi.
Right, right.
That is – that same animation is repeated in Jungle Book
later. Oh, okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But you get to see Wart's dad, and he's – what a character. I mean, he's not a dwarf of, like, the – you know, not out of Tolkien, but if he were shorter and he had an axe, he could be a dwarf.
Right. That same voice actor would play the Disney version of Gimli.
Yes. He's just, you know, big red mustache, red hair, you know, kind of barrel-chested, but also a chubby guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you say, boy. You know, he's like got that very booming, deep.
Well, you know, and what's interesting about that guy is he's also the one who narrates at the beginning. Same voice actor.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's a good point.
And he's also the same voice actor that plays Bagheera in Jungle Book.
I had never put that together.
Yeah.
That's right.
Isn't that wild?
That is great.
Yeah. So it just goes to show, like, a good voice actor.
Yeah.
A good voice actor can do where you're like, wow, Bagheera. Wow, okay.
Yes.
And then this guy, they're kind of opposite kind of characters, you know?
Oh, yeah, completely. Bagheera was the caretaker and the guy that was looking out for Mowgli.
Right, he's the panther,
you know?
And he's very calm and reserved in this. And
yeah, very smooth.
Yeah, very smooth.
This guy's frenetic.
Boisterous. And
boisterous, and yeah.
Absolutely, I think it's really interesting. And the guys who do the music for this movie, this is the first of their pairing together, they would go on to do the Mary Poppins movie.
Oh, okay.
The music for Mary Poppins, too.
Interesting.
And so, like, just talking about like the backstage element of this, right? When when he gets turned into a bird and they go out flying and he's flying for the first time, you can hear the same melody of Let's Go Fly a Kite.
Oh,
he's like flying up there like da 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 da, and it goes on to other music and then it'll loop back and go la da 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 da. Da, 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 and it goes back again, but I think it's just interesting to start to see the through lines that we see.
Yeah,
yeah, but he's great. Yeah, no, the guy who I can't remember the character's name, Kay's dad, but
yeah, I forget his name, but
he's
great.
Yeah, yeah, he's this great ball of energy that comes on the screen.
Yes,
when he comes in,
and I love because he clearly worships his son Kay.
Oh yeah,
and he, you know, he's a prodigy, not a prodigy. He's the alpha male. He's the high school quarterback, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wants him to be a great fighter and be a knight and be all these things. And then Wart shows up with Merlin. And he ends up sending Wart away, like, demerits, you've been away. You didn't tell us where you're going.
Yeah,
that
go
type
clean.
Of thing. Why'd you go into the forest? You shouldn't have gone.
Yeah.
But I love that when he finally starts talking to Merlin, Merlin proves to him that he's a wizard.
Right.
And he casts the wizard blizzard.
The wizard blizzard.
That he calls. And he's there shivering. Oh, by Jove, you know?
Yeah, right.
A blizzard indoors in July. And, of course, Kay's like, so what?
Yeah.
As he rips down his fourth drumstick.
Uh-huh.
But I love, love, love that the guy calls him Marvin.
Me too, dude. I have that written down, too. Well, Marvin, we're going to do it's Merlin. Right, Marvin.
It must have been that old goat Marvin.
It's so good.
Kills me every time.
Me too. I love it. I love it. So, little inconsistency question. So, we've seen that Merlin or Marvin can pack up his whole house. We've seen what he can do. We get the little thing where Kay's dad goes, well, I hope you don't, you know, touch that black magic, you know, and he's like, oh no, I don't use dark magic at all. So we know that, like, the magic he practices is good and that he can use it for good things. So then he goes up to his little tower, the guest room, and you know, the Kay's dad says, well, you know, in the winter it gets a little drafty, but when is this hot, in this hot weather, it's great. And you're like, you're in England and it doesn't look like it's that hot out anyway. Goes up there, whatever. Instantly smash cut to it raining, and he's getting drenched up in that tower.
Yeah. Torrential downpour.
Torrential downpour, and of course there's holes in the roof and all this stuff. And I'm just like, we just saw that Merlin can control blizzards and weather. So couldn't he have just cast a little spell so that, like, he doesn't get wet?
Yeah, I mean,
I've never understood that.
He was literally, like, pushing umbrellas through the holes and then opening them and setting them on top of the hole so it wouldn't rain inside.
Right.
But it's one of those deals, like, yeah, you're a wizard. Why don't you just
fix the roof?
It's like we need a Rogue One for this moment.
Right.
Yeah, like the Death Star. Why would they leave this exhaust port 2 meters wide that you could shoot a bomb into?
Exactly.
And then they made Rogue One to be like, well, we did it on purpose.
Yeah, this is why, yeah.
Sorry, spoiler alert for Rogue One. Anyway,
it's always – and, of course, like I think it's called an anachronism when you take something that's out of the time period and it's in a different time period. Umbrellas wouldn't have been around at that point.
Of course, right.
So, like, that is maybe you could make the argument that, like, well, he's a wizard, and so what he uses are umbrellas to block the rain.
Right.
But I don't know. I have some questions.
manual umbrellas seem a lot more of a pain in the ass than –
then the magic spell that you could just, like, even if you don't repair the roof, you have the power to just block it off so it doesn't happen.
We already know you can pack your whole house into a little bag. Why don't you just put a spell on some rocks and plug up the ceiling?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or, like, live in your bag for a little bit. But it's wet out here. I'm going to just shrink down and go in here. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, I've always thought that's interesting. And then we meet the next character that comes in, who is like, I don't remember this guy's name either. Apologies.
It's Pelinor.
Pelinor, is that his name?
With Pelinor, dash it all!
The bristly mustache.
Yes.
That's one of my favorite bits of animation in this, where he like, yep. And it's like little brushes back and forth. And you're like, yeah, I know those people. It's like Sam Elliott. Yeah, exactly. With that big old mustache. You're like, yeah, that mustache could just do a little brush. It's independent.
Yes.
It's hilarious. And I love the sound effect.
Yeah. Every time he gets wet, or every time there's like an itch, he kind of wiggles it. It's like
he wiggles his nose kind of thing.
It's like Bewitched.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
But with his mustache.
Just
sandpaper kind of.
And it's a different animation or drawing representation of a mustache than we see on Kay's dad or whatever, which is like a lot more smooth and sort of whatever. And this guy is very like pointy and very clearly not trimmed.
Yes. You know what I mean? Yes. Kind of wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Bristly.
And I love that he comes in like out of the pouring rain.
Yeah.
Thundering. And I don't know if it's thundering and lightning, but he pulls up to the drawbridge.
Pelinor.
And they lower the drawbridge for him. Just kind of cool medieval, you know. He could have just walked in the room. Hey, I'm here.
Right.
Instead, they do this animation where he shows up outside.
Who goes there?
Yeah, that type of a thing. Yeah. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is great. It is great. Yeah, my next note is the next morning. He wakes up, and Archimedes is like, "Wake up, wake up!" And Merlin's like, "Huh? Who? Where are we? Did you forget about the boy? Boy? What boy?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it's just so funny. Like, Merlin, what the fuck, dude? Like, wow. Makes sense. I mean, he's an old wizard or whatever. And then we see, like, Kay, you know, it's when we learn that, oh, so Kay's not only a fucking idiot, he's also not that good of a jouster knight. Like, he's also, it's one thing to say of like, he's an idiot, but he's still as good at, that's his one thing he's good at. He's not even good at that. He gets blown off of his horse by the dummy.
Yeah.
Jouster guy.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And then like keeps going all the way through and runs into the castle, which shakes the whole like castle, the whole tower. And something I never noticed before is that he gets up and he has a black eye. His right eye is a black eye. And the horse he's riding also has a black eye on the same side.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that the horse, I mean, it's horrible because it's, you know, animal cruelty, but, you know, it's a cartoon. I love that the horse also has a black eye. And the look that the horse gives Kay is hilarious, where he's just like, are you a fucking...
Yeah, he's like rolling his eyes.
Yeah,
at him,
like, I love it.
Come on,
yeah,
man.
Right, love it.
Sir Ector.
Sir Hector.
That's the guy. It's actually...
Oh,
Ector? I was looking it up. It's Ector. Sir Ector.
I wonder if that's because of the dialect.
Probably. That's probably
Sir Ector.
But this is where...
I'm glad that we have his name finally. Instead
yes.
of like
I mean,
Kay's
I keep
dad.
Calling him the guy.
The guy. But Sir Ector.
Is this the part of the story where Wart becomes Kay's squire? Or does it...
Wart's been Kay's squire through this whole thing. And then Merlin, I think the next part is
the fish?
Yeah.
Yeah. The fish sequence, which I love. I mean, I love the whole movie, but all these sequences with the animal. I always, I think like most kids or like maybe most people, like I always dreamed of being an animal.
Yeah, of course.
And the idea of being able to swim like a fish was just so cool.
Yeah.
And this.
Well, and it's a great shot when he's walking. Something I didn't remember, but this was like, again, if we're when I was talking about watching in the 4K HDR thing, when they're walking alongside the stream,
yes,
and we're watching the scene happen, but we're watching the scene happen in the reflection of the stream,
yes,
and that was something I was like, whoa, that's really shiny, wow, that, whoa, and also earlier along the 4K HDR thing, when the sun is setting on the top of that mountain. The colors are so vibrant and deep and rich. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, 4K HDR, 4K is the amount of pixels. So that's like how the detail of the lines and whatnot, that's the difference between like 1080p and that's 10, you know, 1080 pixels, and 4K is 4,000 pixels. And then the newer TVs that are coming out now that are like 10 grand are 8K. So you got double 4K now, you know, so that's what the difference is. HDR is the quality of each individual pixel. So HDR has to do with the color. So when you have HDR, that means that the color is going to be much more vibrant and much more close to what we experience with our own eyes. And so what's cool about watching Sword in the Stone in HDR is when the original artists drew this, this is the closest that we can get to seeing the colors that they intended.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So that's why people are like, oh, well, you know, I don't care. I'm going to watch it. But that's the difference between like DVD, Blu-ray, 4K. Like that's where, you know, you might not technically be able to explain the difference or see or whatever, but your experience of it is the closest to the real thing that the artist intended. So seeing something like this for the first time in 4K HDR is really cool because you and I are used to seeing it on VHS tapes or, you know, on, like you mentioned, on TV. And so to see those sunsets and see the glistening and glimmering and to see the reflection in the water, you're like, wow, it looks really good. And it gives this whole other meaning of, like, we know that they're about to go into the water and have this thing, but, you know, they're reflecting on life and the reflection of life above and below and all of these different things that are like, wow, what a great sequence.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I just think that's really cool.
It is really cool. And I'm bummed because I watched it on my phone.
Which is still...
still great.
And a lot, I think the new phones have, like the Retina display is still, it'll still show it in my, it's still closer than what we've seen before.
Sure, yeah. It looked great even on my phone. So
yeah, of course it does, yeah.
I mean, it was awesome.
The screen on your phone is better than the TVs that we had for up until 2010, you know what I mean? Like, and even then, you know. Anyway. I love that shot. And then, of course, you're swimming through and he eats the bug and you're like, oh, right, that's that thing that you wouldn't think of when you get transformed into a fish and you can like swim like a fish and just, but then, yeah, you still have those urges of that animal, which is interesting.
Right.
You know?
And then he flips out. I swallowed a bug.
Yeah. You know? He's like, well,
it's instinct, boy.
It's instinct. Yeah. And I love how the design of the fish where Merlin's fish still has like the glasses.
Still has the glasses. And he has this little like goatee.
Yeah.
He has this little tiny mistletoe beard.
Uh-huh.
And then Wart has just the eyes.
Yeah.
He's like, he looks like Nemo, kind of.
Yeah, he does. That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that, like, no matter what happens, the glasses always, like, flip around and then land exactly perfectly back on the little nose.
Yeah.
It's great.
But the whole sequence is amazing because he's learning to swim and then the frog comes in just
left
to mess
and
with
right.
him.
To and fro, whatever that means. Yeah.
And I love that Wart, as that song progresses, as Merlin is singing.
Yeah, it goes like Wart, up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And stop and go.
Forth,
yeah.
Stop and go, right. And then he gets for every
for two, every two.
There is a, and he goes, fro. Fro? Fro.
Fro, yeah. Merlin's like, it's fro. Oh, all right. Fro, fro. Yeah. So funny.
Yeah, I love that. The whole sequence is great. It's mm-hmm. fun. It's exciting. You get to see a real element of danger with the – I think they said it was a pike.
Yeah.
The pike shows up, and mm-hmm. that whole sequence is awesome.
I love when they interrupt Archimedes from his sleep, and Archimedes –
I love it.
I think he's turning into my favorite character in this this watch through, because he, like, every time he's asleep, he wakes up and goes, who? What? What?
Yeah.
Who? What? What?
And he's so discombobulated and so angry.
He gets all, like,
all the
puffed
time.
Up all the
Just feathers puffing out.
Yeah, it's so funny.
And then, of course,
it.
You know, he saves him. And
mm-hmm. But he also is crotchety, and he's like, well, I was trying to eat him. I wasn't saving him.
You know, perch is my favorite dish.
Yeah.
Which is the first time I've ever picked up that line.
Yeah.
Because I think he says perch, yeah, which is a fish.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, he doesn't even want to admit that he cares about him.
Right, right.
And, yeah, and, of course, it was great to have this whole sequence, Merlin teaching Ward about it. But then, of course, Ward goes back to his family, and now they're like, you're so full of shit, kid. Demerits, right. Demerits, demerits.
Go do the dishes.
Yeah. And then I love that Merlin's just like, eh, fuck these dishes. I got a spell.
Yeah.
And then he's like, look, I'm supposed to do them. He goes, it doesn't matter, lad, as long as the work is done. And right. he's like, dances his way out of the kitchen. Ah-cha-cha-cha.
Yeah.
And they're on their way to do the next thing.
And that's one of the – and then we get some of the – I'm in general, the score in this movie is stunning. I mean, it's beautiful with the – we didn't talk about it earlier, but, like, when all of those – like, the chairs start coming in to like, shrink to go into his bag. And
yes.
All the, but, like, the oboe and the tuba and, like, all of these – it's really stunning, and it was nominated for an Oscar for Best Score.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is incredible. And watching it, like, oh, you know why. I mean, you could listen to some of these, like, at the New York Philharmonic, and they're really well-composed pieces.
Yes.
But then we kind of break out of that, and we get this sort of, like, it reminds me of 101 Dalmatians, really, but during the dishes, washing of the dishes, you get the jazz piano. And it's the jazz version of the spell that he did earlier. And we get the jazz version, and it's really cool. I'm like, yeah, I could jam to that. And the bristles are like the percussion, and the, you know, it's cool.
That's what's great. Yeah, the bristles are the percussion
on the dishes. Yeah.
You know, they're scrubbing the dishes clean.
Yeah.
I really love it.
It's great.
And from here, we go straight to the squirrel part.
Yeah. And that is, well, yeah, that's my favorite. I think my favorite sequence of the whole movie is the squirrels.
The squirrels.
Oh, dude. The squirrels, it really is my favorite sequence in the whole movie. I would say this and the magician's duel are my two favorite sequences in the whole movie. I look forward to the squirrels every watch. I'm like, oh yeah, it's squirrel time. I really love it. And I think it's that, like, inner romantic in me, and this sort of, like, I remember this feeling as a kid watching this, being like, yeah, girls are gross, but then also kind of like still wanting, like, finding girls cute or whatever, you know. It's like we were talking about, you know, earlier, of like of Power Rangers. You're like, you're little, and you're like, yeah, Power Rangers and this, but man, Kimberly's really cute, and like, I have feelings, but I don't know what those are, but I really like that one. Yeah. You know. And I think there's that element of, like, this whole love story that evolves, and we get, you know, more than, you know, we get a little bit of it with the frog in the fish sequence of, like, characters of learning, but we really get an in-depth, like, full character for both of the two squirrels that come in here.
Yes, and I see, the thing is, in the sequence, Wart gets this little squirrel. I don't know, she's a female, and
yeah,
she's
get a crush on him.
She's in love with him. She's immediately, and I think Merlin says at one point, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, meaning I know he says this, but I don't know if this is accurate in life.
I know what you're gonna say,
but he says
it's not accurate.
They don't
continue.
Mate for life.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what does he say?
But he says, yeah, when a I don't know if he says a female squirrel or when a squirrel picks a mate, it's for life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of laughing about it to Wart, like, well, that's the way it is, boy, you know, like, this is something you're gonna have to learn, you got to deal with it, this is whatever, this is life, because, you know, this girl is all over Wart, and he's just like, I don't know, she's a squirrel, man, I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah. And
she likes you.
This is why we got to talk about this, because this is where I have some questions as watch through because I was like, okay. So let's break this down for a second. Merlin is sort of playing the joke on Wart of like teaching him the lesson about relationships and love and all that kind of stuff, right? There's that element of this. But he's also like, well, you're on your own. Like, gotta figure it out. Like, almost kind of coaxing him to like, to kind of like mate with this squirrel.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like, if the older squirrel doesn't come in to mm-hmm. start bugging Merlin, what does Merlin want to have happen? Because he's not going to save him.
See, I don't get that vibe. I get it as like, you have to figure your way out of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I perceive it, as opposed to like, yeah, go fuck that squirrel, boy. Get in there. You know, like.
Yeah, I don't know, because I was like, this watch through, like, it did seem like Merlin was like, well, you got to learn about girls sometime, because there are a lot of references to like, well, relationships have this and this. And sometimes when you see like there is a lot of subtext in this sequence about when two people meet for the first time and like, where does a relationship lead to and physicality and all of this kind of thing. And she's like, the squirrel is like kissing Wart.
Yes.
Squirrel Wart.
I like, too, that it's kind of funny because as, like, Merlin's singing a song, and as he's singing the song, she, like, smooches him to the beat at a couple of points. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Maybe it was, you know, it was released 50-something years ago. Maybe it was kind of a safer thing. Like, well, she's a squirrel. What is he going to do? You know, maybe that was the idea back then.
Yeah, you can't think of it.
It's also
deeply.
A kid's movie, so maybe that it's, you know, supposed to be a probably base-level kind of overview.
Uh-huh.
But the thing about this scene that gets me is Merlin, eventually, the whole thing backfires because this squirrel that, you know, he thought Wart was in a predicament. Now here's this squirrel
who's like matron squirrel.
Yeah, this like matron squirrel. Like,
she's bigger. She has like a lower like squeaker voice.
And she's like, ah! She's like really obnoxious.
She has like a gap in her teeth.
Yeah. And she has, you know, the squirrel that Wart's dealing with is like cuter, just has a big fluffier tail. Just
she has a similar animation to Maid Marian, and the way the Maid Marian looks.
She does. Whereas the one that's dealing with Merlin looks like a groundhog.
Yeah.
Almost like a woodchuck with like a tail.
She looks like a beaver.
Yeah, she does. She does, yeah.
Which, double entendre? I don't know.
Maybe. But I love that part because she's all over Merlin, way worse than the other girl.
Yeah.
And I love, she grabs his tail, and at one point he goes, Madam!
Yeah, I have that exact note written down too. It's such good work, voice work by the actor who plays Merlin, because it does feel like his voice work there sounds like if someone were to just like randomly come up behind you and like touch your inner thigh, you go, excuse,
yeah,
hey, oh, oh, you know, like, madam, I say, you know, and it really is so brilliantly done, and I love this whole sequence of then, like, when I sit there, and I tell you, every time I see like squirrels and trees, I think of this movie.
Yeah,
because you know, in North Carolina and in Colorado, there are so many squirrels. We don't really get them a lot here in the city, clearly, but you look up and you see them all like roughhousing and running around and going around and around the trees. And the animation here is really great representation of that.
Yes, I thought so too.
And then giving story to it.
Right.
Like, oh.
Oh, they're getting it on.
Yeah, right. And the wolf again shows up and he just has his jaw open.
That sequence when Wart's running from her and he almost falls and she runs down to save him.
Yeah.
But when she comes up and the wolf's just about to eat him because he gets stuck under a branch on the ground, and when she runs up and hits his back leg, like, with all those bites, and he's like,
yeah. Well, and there's something like really, I think another reason I really like this is that it's a really kind of a, I think the most serious, I'm trying to think back if there is, I don't know. I think this is like the most serious time that we get from the movie, because like, this is a character in this girl squirrel, can't believe how I'm speaking about this, who is ready to give up her life.
Yes.
Like, she is charging a huge wolf to save this other squirrel that she just met and is in love with. And it's that thing of, like, the animals, they found it, and they're all in. And this lesson that Merlin gives about love is really deep that comes out here later.
Yeah.
So much so that, like I said, this squirrel literally met her mate less than 5 minutes ago and is ready to give up her life for him. And when Wart turns back, like, she saves him, and that, like, feeling of love, pure love, of like, I'm so glad you're safe, and I saved you, and we're what it was, is really powerful. And then when Wart turns back to a human, again, this animation, going back to this animation thing, but that's sad, that how sad she is.
She's, and the so tears, sad.
And it's really, really, and Wart handles it. You know, it's a breakup, right? Like, right. It's a breakup, and Wart handles it very well. He goes, "No, I wish you could understand me.
Yeah,
I wish
tried
you could,
to tell you, yeah,
yeah. I tried to tell you, and I wish I could explain to you that, like, I never was a squirrel." And then you get this deep thing of, like, you know, people who aren't really meant to be together. Maybe, you know.
And it's so sad because as this is happening, she's crying. You hear, she's crying like that. And so now Merlin has turned back into his self, and he's turned Wart back in, and they're walking away. And he said, "That love's a funny thing, boy." And he says, because he's already taught him about gravity at the beginning of this.
Right.
And he says, "You know, that's a very strong force or something." And he says, "Greater than gravity?" And he says, "Well, yes, boy. In its way, I'd say it's the greatest force on earth."
Right.
And the girl squirrel is now at the top of, like, a dead tree.
Yeah.
And she's watching them leave.
Right.
And it's fucking heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
It's so sad.
It's so sad, man.
I feel so bad for her.
Absolutely.
And it's funny because, like we were saying, the juxtaposition between the girl squirrel hitting on Merlin. And the female squirrel hitting on Merlin, but, like, the young girl squirrel kind of hitting on Wart.
Mm-hmm.
The female that's hitting on Merlin is so annoying that when he turns back into a guy and he, like, scares her off, it's funny.
Yeah, because he goes, actually,
and he, like, yells at her.
And he says, "I told you, I'm a grumpy old man."
I wrote it down. He says, "There, you see? I'm an ugly, horrible, grouchy old man."
Yeah. And then he starts barking at her. And it really is. That's why I said it's like my favorite sequence, because you have that juxtaposition, older relationship, this kind of thing. It's almost like an old married couple that you can see, of like that kind of feeling versus like the Romeo and Juliet type love or whatever. And this juxtaposition is really, it really is the most touching part of the movie for me.
Yeah. From here we go back. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's it.
Well, I was going to say, from here we go back to the kitchen.
Yep.
Where the dishes are all being done. And the servant or the maid runs up to Sir Ector outside, and she's like, "The kitchen's bewitched. There's a spell." And he says, "I bet it's that old goat Marvin." Yeah, you know,
and old goat Marvin,
and he runs down into the kitchen, and the whole kitchen's like, there. I mean, they're banging out. It's like a jazz club of dishes in there, and he goes,
"It's like a jazz club."
All the dishes are dancing, stuff. Mop is mopping the floor.
Yeah, it's great.
Everyone's partying.
Yeah,
but all the work's getting done, and he goes, "Gadzooks!
Yeah,
black magic of the worst kind."
It's almost like the sugar bowl is like Sir Ector, you know, like, because then he, like, pops up and he brings his sword out and starts fighting against the pans. And,
yes.
Like,
and that whole sequence where he ends up in the wash bin and they're scrubbing his face, and then Kay tries to fight them, and the mop grabs his face and is mopping the floor with his face.
Yep.
And then, you know, Merlin walks in,
well,
breaks it
before
up.
Before Merlin comes in, it made me think, like, wow, Kay is so inept that he can't sword fight a broom.
Right. He's got a sword and the broom takes him down.
Yeah, right. And then I thought, man, could you imagine how utterly disgusting that mop would be? Think about it. We're in the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages. Nasty-ass water, just disgusting, horrible. And then you get your face wrapped completely in this mop that has been used to clean, like, the bathroom and all this shit, and then dunked into the dirty mop water and then back on the floor. Again, Has nothing to do with the movie. I was just like, whatever.
But still.
It just hit me this time through, like, oh, God. That would be fucking disgusting. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyway,
oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Merlin comes in and goes, like, ah, Alakazam. Fight.
Yep. And they all just, boom, done.
Yep.
And I think this is the part where they tell him not to come back. And
right.
Ward gets all the demerits and he pops off. You don't know what you're talking about. And then he demotes him from Squire.
Yeah. We're going to have someone else be his Squire.
Yeah. He demotes him from Squire.
Bristly guy's son's going to be Kay's Squire, right?
Hobbs.
Hobbs, yeah.
Hobbs. And so then Warwick gets stuck having to, you know, clean up all the dishes.
Right, now he's just a peasant with nowhere to go, no upward motion or any way to get out of his current situation.
Right. And then but he says to Merlin, you know, Merlin kind of twinkles back into the room. I'm sorry, lad. I knew you wanted to go to London. And he said, I shouldn't have popped off like that. I shouldn't have talked back. And he said, you know, you can still – only way to go is up. So we can continue your education and do that. And he said, okay. And the next day they start the education. But I love that Merlin starts trying to show him stuff. And he fails with the flying – is it he fails with the flying machine here?
Yeah.
And then – but then I forget how it goes. Oh, no. Let me take that back.
Yeah. The flying machine comes after he fails earlier.
So he goes – to Merlin to get educated, and Merlin is showing him a picture of a flat earth, which is now something that many people believe again.
Right.
And he said, let's get these medieval ideas out of your head. And then he starts teaching him, but Archimedes is like, you're teaching him history in reverse.
In reverse.
How can he know that? It's right. already confusing enough.
Right.
So he lets Archimedes teach him. And he's teaching him to write.
The
and
ABCs.
He goes, read all these books. There's like 1,000 books stacked right. up. That, my boy, is a mountain of knowledge. He's like, I can't read. What? I don't suppose you know how to write.
Hoo-hoo, what?
Yeah. And he flips out and he starts teaching him to write. But then they do the flying bit with the flying machine that gets tangled in his beard.
Yeah. And when Archimedes laughs at Merlin, it's one of my favorite parts of
gets
the
movie. Gets tangled in his – he tries to fly a plane out the window, but it gets tied up in his beard.
Right.
And then it crashes into the pond. And he said, before he did it, Archimedes, man, will fly one day. I have seen it. And he's like, sure. And then, of course, the plane fails because it falls straight down into the water and breaks. Archimedes laughing at that.
He loses his mind. It's so
funny.
It's so funny. And it's a great voice acting moment too, because this is an actor that goes great. Like you're playing an owl who can speak English, but like still native language is who. So he starts laughing with the hoo. And then he starts going into this like great like cackle that sounds like a hawk almost, or like bird like laugh, and he's just laughing. It's so funny.
It sounds like a bird laugh. He's like,
right, like because he's laughing out, and then he like breathes in with that. Yeah. It's so good, man. It's so funny. It's one of my favorite things.
And from here we go to the flying scene.
Yep.
Merlin, you know, oh, I would love to fly. Blah blah blah. And Merlin turns him into a bird, and then Archimedes goes to teach him.
Yeah. Right. Yep. And then the hawk thing happens, and we get the before.
I was just going to say, it's so funny because Wart has a bowl kind of Dutch boy haircut.
Yeah.
But somehow, as a bird, it looks so much worse. When he has that haircut as a bird, it's like, dude, how did you, with the ability to fly, make this haircut look worse? It's like, all right, as Wart. That's your haircut. That's fine. That's a normal haircut. As a bird, it's like, why does that bird have a Dutch boy haircut?
So I never thought of that. It's true, though. It's so true. Oh, man. Yeah, that's good. Oh, man. Yeah. And then the hawk thing, that's like the danger of this bird, this sequence is the hawk. We get this great shot of Madame Mim's hut where the roof looks like a witch's hat.
Yeah.
Which is great.
The hawk basically chases Wart to the hut.
Mm-hmm.
And he crashes in there.
Crashes in. And Madame Mim is a great character.
I love
She
Madame
is
Mim.
So good. And this whole introduction to her is just great. I mean, it kind of sucks that, like, the only real, you know, female character that we get is the evil one. Mm-hmm. But still, like, how her whole little song, the marvelous, wonderful, ugly, whatever, wonderful Madam Mim, and is... It's great. I mean, I can change into this and be a pretty lady, or I can be like when she turns ugly into the pig. And I remember as a kid, like, that scared me when she turned into that ugly pig.
Well, I love too, even just at the fundamental level, everything she says is she fully embraces horror and death and sickness and whatever. And the whole opening of this scene is Wart falls down the chimney pipe. And he's covered in soot, and he's like, and he's coughing, and she's playing solitaire at her table, and she goes, oh, that, she says something like, it sounds like somebody's sick. I do hope it's serious.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
She
right.
just, everything she says is about, I really hope things are terrible. I really right. hope things are bad.
Yeah. Right. Right. Absolutely.
And it
yeah.
just reinforces how evil she is.
It's true, and puts her at odds with Merlin, who's like the exact kind of opposite, you know. Yeah, I love it, and I love how, you know, at the end of her little song, she just goes, "Oh well, I guess I'll have to destroy you."
Yes,
and you're like, Jesus, she said that. I mean, that it's not like I'm going to kill you. I guess I'll have to destroy you.
And Merlin, you know, she establishes like, oh, Merlin must see something in you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah. And Merlin uses his magic for good, because her whole song, her whole shtick that she gives him is about how she can be terrible, and she's terrible, 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 terrible.
Right.
And one of the things, it's the tiniest little moment, and no pun intended, it's the tiniest little moment in the song. She goes, I can be huge, and she grows up and fills the whole house. And then she shrinks down, and now she's on the table with Wart, who's a bird still.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I can be teeny, small as a mouse. And as she's doing that, she's playing hopscotch on the playing cards that are on the table.
Right.
She's like hopping down the pattern of the hearts and the diamonds and stuff.
Right.
It's the smallest little moment, but I love it so much.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I love that she changes into like the seductive evil woman or whatever.
Yeah.
And you go like, yeah, that's like, you know, that's like the evil queen from Snow White, right? Like the seduction of beauty, but she's quote unquote hot or beautiful, but something's still kind of off, even in that beauty. It's still like, I don't know what it is, but there's still something dark about this, you know. I don't know, and it's interesting how she just like revels in the fact that she's ugly. Like, she's like, I'm ugly, and
yeah.
I like that. That's what I am, or whatever, you know?
Yeah, she definitely loves it.
It's so interesting.
And like you said, she goes to, you know, kill Wart. She said,
I guess I'll have to destroy you now.
And I'm mad about games, you know? And obviously, she's been playing a game.
Yeah.
As soon as the first thing we see, she's playing cards by herself. Yeah. And so she turns into a cat. Which notoriously will play games with its prey, right?
Right, right.
And here we go. Now it's on. It's Wart flying around the whole hut while she's going after him.
Yep. Archimedes has seen where Wart lands, so he had gone to go get Merlin. Right, you know, and before the inevitable happens, Merlin storms in, and we get to the duel.
The duel is my favorite part
of
the movie.
It's so good, man. And I was reading something about, like, how cutting edge and on the forefront the animation was in this sequence because of how many changes happen in so little time.
Yeah.
That in that when this came out in the early 60s, it really was like, you know, again, Disney pushing technology of animation forward.
Yeah.
Because of the need of all of these fast changes between all of these wildly different shapes and the colors. And it's great and on that element of things.
Yes, I remember very distinctly as a kid, like the whole I loved animals, dinosaurs, insects, all that stuff as a kid. So mm-hmm. this sequence where you get to see the whole idea is we'll change back and forth in animals and whoever wins,
right.
that type of a thing. and how, like you were saying, how quickly it's just boom, 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 change, 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 counter, counter, counter.
Well, and it's like a game of chess too. At the same time, we're like, okay, so you're going to be that, and then what could, you know, what could beat that? Okay, and it struck me this time through how well conceived this sequence is.
Yes.
Of, you know. Because you sit there, you analyze, you go, okay, so he changes into that, like, just change into this big thing. Well, if he changed into the big thing, then she could counter by changing into this other little thing that could – it's so – and Archimedes sets it up early. He goes, it's a battle of wits.
Yes.
It's not brawn. It's a battle of wits. Who can outsmart the other by choosing just animals?
And that's really what, for the most part, Merlin always takes the path of least – resistance, you know, like she changed. First of all,
well, she's always like the predator.
Yes. And she, before the thing even starts, she's like, no disappearing, now we'll turn back to each other and count to 10,
and no like make-believe animals like purple dragons.
Yeah. And so she starts, all right, take 10 paces, 1, 2, and immediately she disappears and doesn't walk at all. Merlin, she disappeared, and then she turns into a crocodile and he snaps into a turtle.
Yes.
And so she snaps her jaw
shut. Which
is
great because, like, okay, instant protective mechanism.
Right. So she snaps her jaw shut, and he shrinks down into his hat, but he's a turtle inside of his hat. And then –
I'm not going to remember all
of
them.
I'm not going to remember all of them either, but, like, then he turns into a
– A rabbit.
A rabbit.
To run away quicker. She bites the tail off.
Yes. She turns into a fox.
Yeah.
And then she chases him, and then he turns into a worm, and then she turns into a chicken, and – it's just he's always coming up with something to get away from her.
Right.
I think my favorite one of them is when she turns into an elephant and he turns into a mouse.
And then she goes, Whoa!
And then she screams and runs away.
Yeah, because afraid of mice.
That one. And then also, too, I think from the mouse, she turns into a snake. And then
– so. One of my favorite incarnations is she's a chicken, he's a worm, he gets flung all the way up in the air.
Yes.
And then as he's falling down, he morphs into a walrus.
Yes. Yes.
To crush the chicken.
Yes.
But the look on the walrus's face of like
he's just smiling.
He's so smug as he's like, I'm gonna crush the shit out of her. She falls, he falls and crushes, and then she grows. That's when she grows up then from there to be an elephant, because what's bigger than a walrus? An elephant. Then the mouse goes into the hole. She then, like, then I think it becomes a snake. He then turns into a crab and tries to pinch the thing off of the snake.
The crab is my other favorite part.
Yeah, the crab is funny. And then instead of a snake coming up through, it becomes a rhinoceros.
Yes.
And the rhinoceros comes up. The rhinoceros then gets charged into a tree, and then he turns into a billy goat.
Yeah, he jumps off of her,
right,
and turns into a billy goat while she's stuck. And that's perfect, because two times I think somebody called him an old goat.
Yeah, right.
And here he is as the old goat.
And it's great because you're like, right, the goat, absolutely. We're talking earlier, we have that inlay of like when Wart becomes a fish, they do have animal instincts to eat the thing. So clearly, when they turn into an animal, there's some sort of animalistic instinct that these characters have.
Right.
Right? And so the animalistic instinct of protection into the shell, right? Animalistic instinct of, you know, of I need to cut off this guy's head as a snake, right? Cut off the snake's head. Well, pinchers. I got to clamp, 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 clamp. Animalistic instinct. I see this thing. It's in the... rammed into the tree. Tree's about there. I need something that's gonna charge. What's my, you know, following the wit of what I need to outsmart the other, but also the visceral thing of what does the action require?
Yes.
You know, so to like match both of those together to come up with the goat or the ram of like, right, this is a being that his first gut instinct is to ram things. You know what I'm saying? Is really brilliant. It's brilliant.
And I have to say that as he transforms from the crab to the goat, the sound effect that they use on that transformation is kind of it's almost like a bunch of small firecrackers that pop at the end, like,
Yeah.
And he kind of pops into being the goat at the last spot.
Every sound effect in this duel is incredible because it's one of my favorite things that I really do this on like a daily to weekly basis where I'll just like put something down and go.
Yep.
So awesome. And that's just what it was. And it is the perfect sound effect for like transfiguration, as if you're, you know, looking at the Harry Potter term, right? Like,
right.
And you're now something else now.
Exactly.
Love it. It's so good, man. It's so good. And there's real danger there. And what's interesting to me too is like when Madame Mim is stuck in the tree and he turns into the goat and she kind of like looks around and she goes, "You wouldn't."
Yeah, she's frantic. "You wouldn't dare."
Yeah. And you're like, "But what? You've been trying to literally
kill
this thing. Like what?" And it makes me go like, "So what is the point of this?" Because at the end, you know, well, let's get to the end. So dragon.
Yeah, she turns into she said no make believe things like pink dragons and stuff, and then she turns into a dragon, and he goes, "Ma'am, you said no make believe things." She said, "Did I say anything about purple dragons?"
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then
he's a mouse again.
Right. Yeah. She catches the mouse, and then he turns into a germ.
Yes. Which in and of itself is bullshit because she said only animals. But at the same time, she's broken like 10 rules as far. I don't give a shit that he broke the rule. A virus is not an animal.
No, but a caterpillar is not an animal, right? If we're going that way.
It's in the animal kingdom. An insect is part of the animal kingdom.
It's part of the animal. Insects are part of the animal kingdom.
I had somebody try to argue with me like fish aren't part of the animal kingdom.
Well, that's – yeah, no, that's
– insects are part of it.
Insects are – yeah.
They're their own big subdivision.
Yeah. But you could then say that viruses are living beings. Viruses and bacteria.
Before we get on a whole thing.
I don't really want to argue
this is a philosophical argument that it's going to like sidetrack us. Either way, let's settle on this. Even if it's not an animal, it's only the first time he cheats and like the 12th time she cheats.
Right.
So she has it coming.
Oh, absolutely.
And he turns into a virus to make her sick.
Yeah. It's the classic War of the Worlds thing.
Yes.
Right? Like the largest little thing can be – that was the worst way of describing that. The largest thing can be destroyed by the tiniest little crack, right?
Yes.
Like the tiniest little thing can take down this big, you know, David and Goliath type thing, right?
Exactly. So then – she's sick, and it cuts to them after the dragon is sick to her in bed.
And so this is where I had the question, right? Like, so what how do you know – is the point of this duel to just incapacitate the other? Because, like, she's trying to destroy Merlin. And, like, he ends up leaving her alive, and you're going to get better in 2 weeks or whatever. Could she have, I guess if she had more knowledge, because it's a battle of wits, could she have turned herself into the antibody that gets rid of the virus or whatever? You know what I mean? Like, at what point do we know, like, it just decided this is the winner?
I mean, I think it comes down to who – she is so sick she can't go on.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes out on top because now there's nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's won. She can't keep going.
Now, if the situation were reversed, she would have killed Merlin.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's the whole idea is he won, and even though she was trying to kill him, he let her live.
Right.
I think it's that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how she looks when she's sick in the bed because she's got a thermometer, and she's got all these giant red spots all over her face, and it looks so fucking funny.
Yeah. and then Merlin goes like, 2 weeks and you'll be fine. And all you need is a little bit of
lots of sunshine. And he pokes a hole in her thatched roof and the sunshine is pouring right in her face. And she's like, "I hate sunshine. I hate horrible, wholesome sunshine."
Yeah, horrible, wholesome. And then we leave. And you're like, wow, what a cool little diversion from the actual story that is King Arthur and like a lot of this, you know, I guess.
But it's to drive home the final point.
Right. Wart still, it's still training Wart.
And he said, "Merlin, you could have died." And he said, "Well, it's okay if you learned a lesson, lad." And he said, "Knowledge and intellect is the real power." Right. You are, boy. you know? Mm-hmm. So it was something along those lines. But, mm-hmm. yeah, it kind of drives home his point he's been saying all the time, like, use your brain.
Right.
And here he is. He's in a position where he's going to be killed. But instead, he outwits her and lets her live because right. he's a good guy.
Right. Yeah, which is what Wart was in, you know, in all of his little animalistic trials, right? Like, in yes. With the fish, it's like, I could turn you back into a human and you could just catch this, you know, prawn that's chasing you or whatever. Or you still have a human brain. Outsmart him.
Right.
You know? And so, yeah, I just think that's really interesting. Well, and then next we go to what's his face gets sick. The other squire gets sick.
Hobbs gets the mumps.
Yeah, Hobbs gets the mumps.
He's all puffed up like a toad.
Right. Yep. And then Wart, he's like, "Oh, Wart, calling you back up to the majors or whatever.
You'll be K Squire." Mm-hmm. And now he gets to go to London.
Right.
And he's excited.
He runs over to Merlin. This is a great example that, you know, we'd always get told in acting school. Good news, bad news for the character is good news for the actor.
Yes.
Right? Characters always go into a scene expecting one thing and then something else happens. So it's a classic example. Wart is so excited. He wants to go to his mentor and he is expecting that he's going to burst in and be like, "Merlin, guess what? I'm a squire again. We're going to go to London." And Merlin's going to go, "That's fantastic, Wart. We're going to go to London and continue your training there." But you could also make the same a point of the other side, right? Merlin's expecting Wart to come back in and be like, "Great, I'm ready for my studies now. You just almost died for me to show me about wisdom and knowledge and how much that is important," whatever. And I say all of that because it leads up to this great argument that ends with Merlin going, "Oh, blast me to Bermuda!
Blow me to
Blow
Bermuda.
Me, that's what I have. Blow me to Bermuda!"
And then he shoots out of the room like a rocket. And then, what I love, too, is he says it, and then he, as if a rocket is taking off, smoke starts appearing, like, all around his feet, and he looks around, like, "What the fuck?" And then all of a sudden, he takes off, flying with no control.
And Wart goes, where did he go? And Archimedes goes, to Bermuda, yeah. You know, whatever. Where's that? Well, some island that hasn't been discovered yet.
Yeah.
Or some place that hasn't been discovered yet.
Is he ever coming back? I don't know, boy. You know, I don't know.
It's so good. I just love that. I want to like.
Me too. I love
it. I wish
it.
I could like bring that into like the zeitgeist now, and just every time I'm angry, he's like, blow me to Bermuda.
Yeah.
You know, Broncos miss a touchdown. Blow me to Bermuda. Fuck. So yeah, then we're in London.
We're there for the big tournament. Yep. Now, one thing we forgot to mention was, at some point during the story, they reveal that this big tournament in London, whoever wins it is going to become king.
King of England.
So, of course, Kay has been training, and he's been knighted. That's what Sir Ector says. We'll get you knighted before Christmas, and then on New Year's Day for the tournament, we'll go down there, you'll win, you'll be king of England.
Yeah.
And so there they are. They're at the tournament. It's really cool animation. They got the two knights fighting and stuff, and there's the trumpets, and it just looks awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
And, of course, you know, the knights get knocked off the horse, and they're fighting with the swords, and then Wart realizes, "I forgot your sword at the inn." And Kay is like, "What? I need that." So he chases him off, and he goes running back to the inn to get the sword. But, of course, it's all locked up. Archimedes tells him, like, mm-hmm. "Everybody's gone to the tournament. It's no use." And then he notices, "Wart, look. They're in the church courtyard.
Yeah.
That's a sword."
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sword and the stone. It's the first time we see the sword since the first opening part of the film.
Right.
And here's Wart, and I love this whole sequence because every time he gets near the sword and touches it, literally light from heaven comes down.
Right, we get a spotlight and we get an angel chorus.
A chorus of angels every time. And Archimedes is like, "Better not touch it!"
Yeah, right. I love Archimedes. Like, "I better leave that one alone.
Better leave it alone!"
Yep.
And then he's like, "Kay's got to have a sword," and he rips it out.
Right.
And then they run back to the tournament, and he gives him the sword. "This is not my sword."
And then we get one of my favorite voice actors in the thing with the guy with the dark
exactly
hair, mustache, beard. And he's got this great booming bass. "Let the kid know," you know.
Yeah, he goes, "The sword and the stone."
Yeah. "It's the sword and the stone." Whatever.
And
it's great.
Yeah, and then he said, well, you know, he goes, where did you, because of course they're like, how did you get this?
Right.
Wart tells him, I pulled it out of an anvil in a churchyard.
Don't lie. You're making a fool of us.
Yes. And he goes, well, go prove it. So they all go back to the churchyard,
mm-hmm.
and then they put it in and they go, okay, Wart, go ahead. Show us what you got. And he puts it in, or it's already in, and he goes to pull it. And then Kay's like, well, hold on a minute. Anyone can pull it once. And I love the delivery of this line. He goes, once it's been pulled. And he actually is trying to pull it on the mm-hmm. word
been.
Either been or pulled. And when he hits that word, he struggles because the animation is there.
Right.
Once it's been pulled, and he can't get it out.
Uh-huh.
Come on, Kay. Give it what you got. And then the Sir Ector jumps in to help him. And now there's eight guys pulling it.
Right.
And none of them can get out.
And then we get our favorite bass guy like, give the kid a chance or whatever.
I agree. Let the boy have a chance.
Yeah, right.
I wish I had that voice.
Me too, man. Me too. It's the James Earl Jones, like,
yeah.
deep, like, oh. It's great. And then we get the spotlight, the chorus, and then, and out comes the sword, and everyone's like, and we get this really kind of touching moment where Sir Ector's like, oh, shit, I fucked up. And Kay, kneel before your king. And the delivery of those lines that Sir Ector gives there is really nice, because it really is like instant reverence and instant respect, and like, oh wow, I misjudged you, I treated you horribly, and a bit of fear, because he now knows, yeah. like, oh shit, I treated this guy horribly.
Well, it's the first thing he says is, forgive me, son.
Yeah,
forgive me. And he said, oh, please, sir, like, you know what, please mm-hmm. don't, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this sequence, because he's got the sword and the whole crowd starts chanting, Hail King Arthur! Hail King Arthur!
But right before that, we get like the full reveal of the name, right? Where we go like,
wait,
what's the boy's name? Arthur. Yeah. And you're like, oh, right.
Right.
King Arthur.
Hail King Arthur. Long live the king. And they're all cheering. And Archimedes is like, like, he can't believe it.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. And then I think it cuts straight to, like,
the
King Arthur
room.
Sitting in the throne. Yeah.
Alone.
Alone. And just like,
with a crown that's too big.
Yep. And a cape that's too big. And he's just like, I don't want this. And Archimedes goes, I told you not to touch it.
And classic.
Told you to leave it alone.
Classic royalty. He's got the red with the white and black dots.
Yep.
The white trim with the black dots on.
Right.
And then he goes, Dad, I'm not fit to be a king. They'll have to find somebody else. I'm getting out of here. And then he goes to go out the door, and Archimedes is like, better use the side door, Wart. And he runs out, and it's like, Hail, King Arthur! Archimedes literally gets blown back into the
That's
room.
That's my favorite part. I love it. I say that all the time. It's my favorite part. But this really is so fucking funny that because then they go to the next door, and Archimedes flies out first and then gets that they're chanting the idea that they're chanting so loud and boisterously that their breath is like a 75 mile an hour wind,
yeah, knocking a owl back into the room like he just got hit with a baseball bat.
It's so funny, and it made me think, you know, like, it's the mark of a true ruler and a true king is the one that doesn't want to be King.
Right.
You know,
right.
like, oh, you know, reminds me of the, did you finish Game of Thrones?
I finished it,
okay,
yeah.
Later on in the series, you know, they're
spoiler,
trying,
spoiler.
Spoiler, spoiler. They're trying to decide, like, should it be John or Danny?
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
And John's like, I don't want to be king. I don't want it. She can have it. And then one of the other characters says something like, yeah, but the mark of a good king is that he doesn't want it.
Right.
And Danny, all that she wants is to be ruler.
Right.
So but it just reminded me of this idea of, like, yeah, imagine, you know, you get someone like our current, quote, leader of the nation who's just power hungry and just wants to be a leader, mm-hmm. just wants to be in a position of power. And
right.
that's not a good leader, not a good ruler.
Right.
Know?
And the next part after Arthur is overwhelmed, he says, like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Merlin, Merlin. He starts calling for him, and all of a sudden, he comes back, and he's in the best vacation grandpa outfit ever.
And it reminds me of the vacation outfit that the genie comes back in.
Oh, that's a good
that's
point.
That's what I've always wondered if it's a call out
to Aladdin, to Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, when the
it
genie does
be.
It. Because it's almost this. It's like a Hawaiian shirt with, like, the thing and
the
glasses
board shorts
and the hat.
And the
yeah.
cap. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is at this moment, I think Merlin comes back on screen with only like a minute and a half left.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's maybe that.
Yeah. And he, you know, one big modern mess. You can keep it. And then Arthur's like.
Which is a great, like, this whole last little bit is very cheeky and great. Yeah. Like, I came back from the, you know, from the future and you can have it. Like, I'd rather live here. And it made me think, like, wow. What was happening that was so bad that he'd rather live in the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, than, you know? And I'm like, well, anyway. Continue.
And of course, he changes back to himself, and he's like, you know, I forget if he says, what's going on, or whatever. And Archimedes is like, well, he's done it now. He pulled the sword from the stone. He's king. And of course, Merlin's thrilled. Ha ha! I knew it.
King Arthur, you're going to, you know, they're going to write books about you in the round table. Round table? Well, would you prefer square? No. Round's fine.
Round would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to make motion pictures about you. What motion picture? And then we get another, like, cheeky call. It's like, yeah, it's like a TV show, but longer and no commercials. And you're like, it's all great stuff.
And then you get the classic Disney, like, chorus singing.
Well, and this is what, even right before that, like, it's like you said, Merlin comes in,
it's not 2 minutes once he comes back.
Right.
It's not 2 minutes long.
And when he comes back, you sort of feel like, okay, great. We have like, we're now in the final scene. We know it's the final scene. We probably have like 5 minutes left where he's going to wrap it all up and then we're going to have a nice ending. And then, nope, it just like Merlin says that stuff and then boom, chorus.
Over. Yeah.
Hail King Arthur! Long live the king!
Yeah, and it's over.
End.
The end.
No credits.
Yep.
No nothing. Just like end. And you're just like, okay. Guess we're done now. It was interesting because on the streaming on Disney Plus, you know how when like on Netflix and all of that, like once the credits start rolling, it'll go to a smaller screen.
It did that for me.
Yeah, it did that for me as well. But I was like, no, the movie's still going. And I had to navigate to like click back to the movie. But it's because it's like, you know, whatever the algorithm is set to, like the last 15 seconds.
Right.
Crazy. So interesting.
Totally crazy. And it was an abrupt ending, but I loved it. This movie of all of the Disney movies, and I know Disney knows what they're doing. They're the MVP gold medal of, for sure, children's entertainment, but their entertainment extends beyond children.
Yep.
Adults love Disney. And
do adults love Disney because we grew up with this?
I did. I grew up with a lot of it, and I still love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I love basically almost all of the things I loved as a kid. So for maybe I'm a bad example, but it doesn't change the fact that Pixar movies are written so that parents will take their kids and laugh their ass off while they're there.
Right.
Toy Story, parents will be like, oh, I love that movie. It's like, of course you do, because it's a bunch of jokes that are supposed to go over your kid's head in it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Whereas this maybe is not the same thing, but this is one of my favorite Disney movies.
It's really great, man. It really is.
I love it.
You know, it's the animation style. You know, we mentioned the music earlier and how, you know, it's music that the songwriters go on to make Mary Poppins and all of that, you know, and the rest of those. And so the music's solid. The animation's really good and forward. And it's still like 70 minutes. I mean, it's like, it's quick.
I think the movie itself is total, including the credits at the beginning, I believe it's 79 minutes.
Yeah. Right.
Just yeah.
Crazy.
79 minutes.
Like
movie.
An hour 20. That's quick.
Yeah. Well, anything else you want to say about the movie before we go?
I do have some news for you.
Okay.
Sword in the Stone's getting a live action remake.
Wow. Who is going to play Arthur?
Please? I am.
Oh.
What? Why were you so disappointed in that? You fucking asshole. You were like legit disappointed. You were like the most legit crushed I've ever seen you.
Hear me out. Hear me out.
Fuck you, dude.
Hear me out.
Okay, go for it.
Hear me out. I just don't see you as a squirrel.
What? I'm not hairy enough? I got enough hair? I'd be the wolf that's like, oh,
please. I'd be I'd be Pelennor, so there you go.
You'd be Archimedes, dude. Like if we're doing,
I would love to play Archimedes.
Oh, absolutely. I would cast you as Archimedes in a heartbeat. I would love that. So it's going to be kind of interesting. So Juan Carlos Fresnadillo will direct from a script written by Game of Thrones scribe Brian Cogman.
Great.
So interesting how we were talking about Game of Thrones in there. Juan Carlos is best known for directing the zombie thriller 28 Weeks Later.
Oh, wow.
Which would be interesting. And again, Brian Cogman is writer-producer for Game of Thrones. And it's being produced by the guy who did the live-action remake of The Jungle Book. This does confirm that Sword in the Stone was the final movie released by the studio before Walt Disney's death, which is interesting. But Disney is also working on the Merlin saga with Ridley Scott circling for directing. And Ridley Scott directed, you know, Gladiator and stuff like that. So that's kind of where we're at with this right now. Disney just released like its whole release schedule for the next 3 years, but a lot of their slots are just like unnamed live action, so we don't know when it will come. But it's gonna be happening. So I'll be really interested to see how they handle it and how they handle. This article says that production was set to start in the summer of this past year. So it'll shoot in Belfast, Northern Ireland. So interesting stuff. Well, I don't know. We'll see.
That's exciting news.
We also don't know if it's going to be like direct to Disney Plus or if it'll go out to theaters. That's the other question. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, that's very exciting news.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to say before we go?
Yeah, so starting back at the beginning. No, that's good, man. I mean, this has been a pleasure. Any Disney I'll watch and love and enjoy, and I appreciate you reaching out and taking the time, and this has been awesome, man.
It's been a blast, dude. Thank you so much for doing it. And again, Movies in the Buff on Instagram, Movies in the Buff on Facebook.
Yep, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Movies in the Buff, and that's where you can find links to our website and all of that stuff. This month we're doing Martin Scorsese movies, which is great. And next month we're going to have you on.
Yes, in case you missed our Level 6-1 episode, we announced it. Next month we're going to have a little crossover, Spectacular in the Buff / Movies in the Show.
Movies in the Show.
Yes, and it'll be some Christmas movies, Home Alone 1 and 2.
Yep.
And we're going to both be doing a little crossover between Movies in the Buff and Spectacular Show.
Right.
So please go ahead, follow Movies in the Buff, download, rate, like, subscribe to their podcast, give it a review, give it a listen. It's a great podcast. I listen to it every week, unless I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, sure.
We've already discussed that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
And next month in December, we're going to be doing a crossover. I'm very excited about it.
John O'Connor making the epic Christmas comeback.
That's, hey.
we're doing it again. Back for more.
Back in the Buff.
Back in the Buff.
What? No.
Better than being Buff in the Back? I don't know.
Oh, boy. Hey-o. I don't know. One of the two. John Dre, everybody.
Why were you so disappointed in that? You fucking asshole.